Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. Coming up, we have that competition for copies of a recently published book of photographs on the Great Blasket. We have the second part of our conversation with Cormac Leavis on the Hare Island lobster boats. Richard Glynn tells Seascapes about the history and heritage of Scattery Island and the gathering event that's planned for the island that was evacuated in 1979. We'll be talking to Michael Walsh in Kinsale, where the Coldstone Asset Management Sovereign's Cup is in full swing. First, on Seascapes to last weekend's stopover by the dramatic multi-hulls for the Route de France visit to Dún Laoghaire. As we boarded from the moorings at the National Yacht Club in bright sunshine and gusting winds, there was great anticipation and excitement. However, shortly after 2:30, the Mod 70 Spindrift, skippered by Yann Guichard, capsized on the first leg of the Route de France inshore races in Dún Laoghaire, just after the start of the race. And as Oman Air passed the first marker, we watched the incident unfold aboard Hal Sisk's motor yacht, the Molly Bone.
He's gone!
Thank God I'm not aboard that.
Oh, yeah,
picture that.
It's the first time any one of these has capsized.
Yes.
All crew were safe and sound, but Jack Guichard, brother of skipper Yann and a key member of the crew, was hurt in the capsize and he was airlifted by helicopter to Talla Hospital and was diagnosed with fractures to the pelvis. We wish him a speedy recovery. Congratulations to all the safety personnel, the RNLI Dún Laoghaire lifeboat crew, the Naval Reserve and the emergency services for their swift response. And we congratulate Oman Air as they were first across the line into Plymouth before the race concludes in Morlaix. Last Saturday night we talked to our leading international sailor now living in Canada. He is Damien Foxhall.
The Transat Jacques Vabre is a double-handed race, so two people on board, and it comes around every 2 years. And it's one of the main kind of transatlantic races, one of the main events of our calendar. I've done it twice before. Once got a third place, the first time I got a third place, and had the unfortunate experience of also capsizing. And again, these aren't Hobie casts, they're not designed to be capsized. And when I saw that out today, there today, it brought home again to me the kind of the enormity in some way of what we're taking on, and the boats we're sailing now, that was previously in 60 foot trimarans. These 70 footers aren't even really designed for shorthanded sailing. It really is. When I got on the boat for the first time in January, I got very good kind of sensations and memories of what we used to do on the 60 foot trimaran circuit, but at the same time I was thinking to myself, this is going to be a hell of a handful for the two guys who are going to do the Jacques Vabre. And at that time, I wasn't planning to do that race. It was being proposed to me recently. And of course, third time lucky, there's something unfinished business there for me. But I'm, you know, again, when you look at the boat flipping over today with a fully crewed team of, professional guys on it, fully crewed, and the boat still flips, it's going to be a hell of an undertaking. Sure. Yeah, we know each other very well. Sydney Gavinier have had a very kind of parallel career, if you like. When they were getting ready for the Whitbread in 1990 something, I stepped on board, and we actually ended up in Quebec, did the Quebec Saint-Malo race. He introduced me to the short handed Figaro Coaching Centre in France. David Kinnefick is down there this year and doing a great job. And that was basically kind of what launched my career in some ways and gave me access to the 60-foot trimaran circuit. We did a double-handed transatlantic race together already, Sydney and myself, and that was a great experience. We did very well. So it was very natural for me to, first of all, step on the boat with him here and have the opportunity to join his great team. I think, you know, it's going very well. I think we've got a good feeling about what's going to come towards the end of the season. Right now we're concentrating on this first half, which is the fully crewed race and the fast net to finish it off in July. and or August, and then for the last half of the year we get into the double-handed discipline, which is going to be, you know, there is nothing really much more demanding than that in sailing. So Omen Air and our and trimaran here is only the pinnacle of a much, much bigger program, which comes out of Oman, which is Oman Sail, and fundamentally is basically just to introduce sport and effort for results, culture for Omani young people, and using the sport of sailing for that. So that's a great kind of example of how important and the potential of sailing. But you know, when we come here to Dublin Bay and four or five yacht clubs lined up, and every single day there's kids and people out sailing, I'm not surprised to see it because I've seen it before. But I think some of the kind of people who live here, you know, Dubliners, in some ways maybe take it for granted. This is one of the is one of the sailing centres, main sailing centres of Europe, in terms of the amount of activity on the bay. A lot of this is foreign sailors who were in here this week are kind of commented to me, you know, Jesus, we're very impressed with the activity around, and it's great to see. So we have something very good, and it's not just here in Dublin. Cork, of course, traditionally, and Galway, and outside of the bigger centres, you know, we can talk about Tralee Bay Sailing Club and many others around the country. So, you know, it's great to see, but that's part of the what Oman Sail is about, and we're the pinnacle, the top of the pyramid, if you like. But there's much, much more that goes on than just our racing boat. It was a present that was given to me and my brother at an early age by my father and mother, and they received it from their parents, and now that I got kids, I kind of realized the importance of that. And I think as a young person, especially when you're involved in sport, it's a very egocentric activity, and that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with sport and excelling in sport, and I intend to continue. But on the other hand, I kind of see other facets to it now, and I have other objectives. So it's great to be involved in other things and encouraging the bigger picture as well. I suppose I touched very briefly on family, but of course it's my family that I miss. And this is a long event. This is 6 weeks. I'll be away from home for 6 weeks. In fact, throughout the whole duration of the Volvo Ocean Race, I haven't been away from my family for so long. So it's quite ironic that we're just doing a round Europe race, but it's actually the longest I've been away from home. So in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to be looking forward to getting back to the living room. But sure. It's only for a short while. The Fastnet race will be looming again, but there you go. I'm very lucky to do what I do, and to have a family that enjoys sharing that with me. So,
Damien Foxhall of Oman Air, to the Shannon Estuary next on Seascapes, and an island steeped in history and folklore. It was last occupied in 1979. We talked to Richard Glynn about Skattery Island and the people who lived there.
The history in Skattery Island goes back since the beginning of time. Saint Senan was around the 5th century. He came to the island. He was a very scholarly, educated man and a religious man. And he came to the island to spread the good word of religion around Ireland. He noticed that there was a lot of trouble going on in Skattery, and there was demons and snakes out there. And he, after time, went to Skattery and dealt with them and drove the snakes out of Skattery Island. And then after that, you had an awful lot of monks who came along to Skattery Island. They built churches, they built round towers, and they lived, life went on fairly good for them. But then as time went on, navigation was sort of getting bigger and bigger in the world. The Danes came to Skattery, they weren't too pleasant. Then the Vikings came to Skattery. And as time moved on, there was an awful lot of good times, and there was an awful lot of hard times out in Skattery. And also when the Vikings were showing off their mettle a bit too much there, Brian Boru came along, and he in turn drove the Vikings out of Skattery Island. Back in around in the mid 1850s, Napoleon decided that he was going to plunder Ireland. He saw that there was rich pickings in the Shannon River, and he had a master plan, which he semi-executed. He did get as far as Bantry Bay, and his intention was to come into the Shannon and take over. So the English were the English were there at the time, so they decided to build battery fortresses on the Shannon, and they actually built seven of them on the Shannon. And there is one of them still there in Scattery Island, which probably is one of the best examples of the battery forts in the River Shannon, because it is very well preserved. The stonework is like the day it was put there. There is a dry moat around it, and it had gun swings for very heavy cannons that were able to fire cannonballs, 28-pound cannonballs, over 1 mile. And also, straight across from Scattery Island, there was Carrick Island, which is about 1¾ miles to the south of Scattery Island. There was another battery fort built there, very similar to Scattery Island. It's incredible. It was like these were the first flat-pack battery fort builds. There's seven of them, and they're all very similar in shape. There's one located at Kilcordan, which is near Carrigaholt. There is another one located at Dunaha, which is just to the east of Carrigaholt, which is in poor enough condition. The one in Kilcordan is in very good condition. Then there was a pair near Tarbert, where the Tarbert Climber ferry operated. There was one in Tarbert Power Station, which was actually blown up and knocked down before they built the power station in 1967. Then straight across from there, there was another one in Kilcairn, Labashida, and they were a pair, which again the distance was 1¾ miles. Each of the heavy cannons could shoot 1 mile, so they had total protection. When Napoleon got wind of the great fortresses that were built in the Shannon, I think he decided to turn on his tail and head back for France. So we were lucky there that the French hadn't come and had a much stronger hand in Irish history. Back in around the early 1800s, a ship was drifting off Loophead. The local pilots who operated from Kilbaha at the time spotted the ship drifting. They went out and they found the ship with no one alive in the ship. There was no bodies on the ship, and they were all mystified as to what happened. They say there was one goat left on the ship. The weather was fairly treacherous, so they decided they got a few more pilots. I think they probably got about 14 or 15 men. She was a very large ship. And they took charge of the ship. They brought her into Carrigaholt Bay, anchored her, and made her safe. At the time, the ship was fair picking for anyone who could take anything from it. So the pilots, I think they spent about 3 to 4 weeks defending the ship, and they also brought the ship safely up to Limerick docks and made contact with the owners of the ship. And eventually, after about a year, they went through the salvage system and they got a very good compensation. With this money, I think it was around about £5,000 at the time, this gave the pilots who lived in Kilbaha a chance to lease and buy Scattery Island. So then the majority of the families, some stayed back in Kilbaha, some came to Scattery, and they had a much more successful pilotage from Scattery, because going back to the previous years, there was an awful lot of drownings and tragedies, because Loophead, as you know, is a very treacherous place. So they had a lot more shelter, so they were able to board the ships in much more sheltered conditions. The core of this event is to celebrate the people who lived in Scattery, to invite them, their families and their friends to come to the gathering. There will be a celebration for 2 days on the island. There will be reenactments, there will be talks, there will be lectures, there will be guided tours, and there will be there also is going to be an ecumenical service on the island, which going back time, sort of, there was many, many religions and many saints and scholars lived in Scattery. There'll be an event for everyone, and we're inviting, there's an awful lot of people who actually live in Kilrush who've looked at Scattery and say, I've never been on Scattery, and we're hoping that an awful lot of those people will take the opportunity to go to Scattery. There'll be a full ferry service on for the 2 days, and I think there's a special rate out to the island for the couple of days. So it'll be a very family-friendly affair. We'll be advising people, you know, to take their time, even bring their picnics and have a bit of fun and bring their families. But it is going to be also as well as the gathering and meeting all the families, there's going to be an awful lot of boats coming to Scattery. And it's the first time. It's like in West Clare, we have an awful lot of tractor runs every time there's a charity event. It's not uncommon to see maybe 150 tractors driving along in West Clare for a very good cause on a Sunday, and the farmers willingly give their time and pay to take part in these events. So this nautical event will be like the tractor run of boats on the sea. We've got great support from our bigger sponsors, such as Shannon Foyne's Port Company. They're hoping to send one of their workboats, the Shannon One, and maybe one of the tugs, maybe the Celtic Isle or the Celtic Rebel, if it's available. Shannon Ferries have committed to moving one of their ferries off station to come down to Scattery Island, do a drive around Scattery Island, pass by Cappa Pier and Alvaroo, and just to honour the people who have come from Scattery. And interestingly, I think when the ferry started, there was an awful lot of people from Scattery Island who would have been there, who would have worked as masters and captains and engineers on the ferry, and they would be part of helped that business succeed as well.
There were artefacts that were on the island, Richard, that disappeared into safekeeping for many years and have suddenly re-emerged.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. These artefacts, they're two stone carvings, which, as far as I'm aware, they would have been removed maybe about 150 years ago. And I think going back that time, the removal of a stone from an old building, it wasn't seen as a terrible sin. And I think it was someone was going to take it. They were building a holiday home in Kilkee. But these stone carvings, they went from the back garden of the holiday home to a holy well in Kilkee, and they were marking a holy well, which was a very honourable thing to do. But they got overgrown with brambles, and there was a local family who realised the value and the history of these, and they brought them into safe keeping. And recently they were happy to see that there was a new group, the Scattery Island Tourism Forum, who were responsible, that they'd see them safely brought back to the island.
That's all happening on the 5th and 6th of July, and details of the event on Scattery Island are on the gatheringireland.com website and on the Seascapes webpage. Earlier this week, in brilliant sunshine and light airs, the biennial Covestone Asset Management Sovereign's Cup took to the waters from the magnificently refurbished Kinsale Yacht Club. The regatta director is Mike Walsh.
I've got to say, we're very grateful to Donald Roach and his team at Covestone. They came on board very early, and that allowed us to spend some money on advertising and particularly to develop our webpage, which in turn led to a lot of early entries, which I suppose brought us to where we are with over 90 entries at the event today. So we're delighted. Well, believe it or not, without any pushing from the gathering and all self-driven, we've got 12 or 13 UK boats, which is well over 15%. Which even at the height of the Sovereign's Cup way back in the noughties, we still only had 10 or 15 UK boats when we were having up to 150 boats. So no, we're delighted, and all the Brits seem to be enjoying themselves. They're very keen to establish the, practice in the West Cork time, so they're taking things a bit easy and they're enjoying themselves. I suppose last year the members took a very brave decision in the current climate, and we committed to a substantial budget to reform the building. The members are delighted. We've got 8 different classes. And of course, we've got IRC and ECHO, so you could possibly divide it into 16. It starts at class 0, right down to class 3. Then we've got 1720s, quarter tonners. They're all out there. The quarter tonner fleet this year is down, unfortunately. We've got 6 boats. There's a couple of boats from the UK and a couple of local boys, and there's stiff competition. 1720s, there's 16 boats on the water. Of course, the headlines here is that you've got Anthony O'Leary trying to top his young son, Peter. Anthony's currently lying in fourth. Peter's top of the leaderboard, and they're divided then by two other 1720s. I actually did a top the other day when we were organising the OD boats, and I counted up to 40 people out on the water helping, and if you add to the other 15 or 20 people who are ashore, it comes to an awful lot of volunteers. And it's not only the volunteers in the yacht club, but the whole town has rowed in. We're particularly grateful for the Good Food Circle here in Kinsale, who've donated some vouchers as part of the prize giving, and we're very hopeful that a lot of the sailors will go and eat in our restaurants. We conservatively estimate we've got 600 or 700 visitors, including sailors and their families. Everybody's having a good time. That can only be good news for Kinsale, for Cork, and indeed for the whole country.
Next on Seascapes to this week's competition, you can win a copy of The Great Blasket, a photographic portrait published by the Collins Press. And the question is, can you name the oldest living native Blasket Islander? He was recently home on a visit from the United States and published his memoir with Gerald Hayes. Answers on a postcard to Seascapes, RT Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork, or by email to seascapes@rte.ie. We head to Ballydehob next, and to the second part of our conversation with Cormac Leavis on the Towsail Yawls.
If you take even the families of or the descendants of these men today, most of them still fishermen, most of them still living in on the sea, but they know so little. A lot of them, I must say, would know very little about the history of what went before them, of their families, and not aware of their heritage really. And a lot of these fishermen out today, I mean, their grandfathers, for example, would have been fantastic sailors and all the rest of it. They've forgotten all that. In the 1950s, you had fishermen growing up for the first time who weren't able to sail, and a lot of the way of life, a lot of the crafts and traditions, the lobster pot making and all the rest of it, is on the verge of extinction. As an island nation, we have forgotten our heritage quite a bit, and yes, we do need to be reminded of it. The mackerel fishery, which took off here in the 1870s, 1880s, Baroness Burdett Coutts made loans available to, interest-free loans available to the local fishermen to buy big drifters from the Isle of Man, and boats that could compete with the foreign fleets that were fishing here at the time. And the shoals of mackerel had just moved down here to this part of the coast, there was a change in their migratory pattern that brought them close to the coast here. So you had a huge number of local boats again, with Manx, English, Scottish, French, all fishing out of Baltimore, and huge industry here in Baltimore. In the spring, you had mackerel exported fresh on ice to England. And then in the autumn, you had the mackerel would have been salted and exported to America in barrels. Yeah, the big thing was there was a failure in the mackerel fishery in America at the same time, and there was a big demand for mackerel in America. Even traditionally, there would have been mackerel was a staple diet of the slaves. Were the slaves in the plantations in South America, in the southern states, referred to them as the fish with an eye, because they would get half a fish split down the middle, and this tradition of mackerel being eaten by the poor in America lived on, and there's a huge demand in America for mackerel. When the mackerel fishery failed in America, the American buyers came here to Baltimore. And there was a huge industry here in Baltimore, with hundreds of big mackerel drifters fishing the spring fishery, and then smaller boats, local boats, all local boats, smaller boats fishing the inshore autumn fishery. So a huge industry here. All but disappeared. I mean, you can look around you here now, and okay, there's very little fishing going on here. I know now that the bigger ports have taken the trawlers and all the rest of it, but at least if you look out to the moorings today, you will see about six of the replicas of the old lobster boats, due to the revival in recent years and locally of building these boats, and also some two or three mackerel yawls, the bigger mackerel yawls that were used in the mackerel fishery. So since the late 1990s, there's been a revival of interest here locally, which is fantastic. It's the first signs, really, that people are getting back to having an interest in their heritage here locally, in their maritime heritage. And a lot of it is thanks to Hegarty's Boatyard on the Island River and Nigel Towes, both of whom have been building these boats and encouraging people and take an interest. It's at the moment, I think maybe partially due to the recession and all the rest of it, you don't have the same interest in buying these boats or in having them built. You do have people who are constantly admiring them and looking out for them, and I think it'll be good for the future. I think there's a possibility that people will become interested again, you know, in these boats. It's, I suppose, the thing is that our population is small too, and in comparison with England, okay, you've got a big population in England. You've got a lot of people interested in boats, an awful lot of English people interested in boats, a lot of English people interested in the Irish boats here. But I suppose our population is so small too, we expect huge number of people to be interested in the boats, and we just don't have the population really, I suppose, you know. But so hopefully things will pick up.
The remarkable Tall Sail Yawls, and our thanks to Cormac Leavis. Next week here on Seascapes, the result of our listeners' competition for those copies of The Great Blasket, a photographic portrait. James O'Callaghan of the Irish Sailing Association on our emerging sailors. Professor Callum Roberts of York University on our ocean wealth and conservation. And Kieran Devaney meets the kings of Torrey Island and Coney Island. All that and much more here on Seascapes. Until next week, tight lines and fair sailing. Thank you.